Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Taylor, the communication doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do. Hi, this is Real Stories, and I am your host, Tanya, the communication doctor. And today on my show, I have the Quinn Farrell. Hello, Quinn.
Hello, Tanya. How are you today?
It's absolutely lovely to have you on. And I just want to introduce you as an engineer, because Quinn's an engineer. But what's quite exciting about what Quinn's passionate about, because he's an engineer that's passionate about emotional intelligence, and he's actually certified in emotional intelligence as well. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that, really, because it's a kind of a different marriage, because everybody needs emotional intelligence, right? And as we said before, it's nothing new. But what inspired you to go and kind of get certified with regards to emotional intelligence?
Well, I think it's just to be clear, I went through the School of Hard Knocks for my EQ certification. I have a training course that's been certified for engineers in the U.S. For emotional intelligence. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, Steve Jobs said you can never connect the dots looking forward. You always have to look back. And for me, it's been sort of an evolution. I knew something was up early in school when I actually scored higher on my verbal than I did my math. Which is kind of odd for an engineer, but being somebody who played football growing up and in college, I went to a military college, so there were some other extracurricular things that happened there, and then did engineering, you know, studies, but then also got my MBA as well because I had a fifth year of eligibility. So I kind of had this hard and soft skill education in and out of the classroom. And so that set me off on a path to say, okay, you know, I knew I was going to be an engineer from an early age. My parents were both architects. My grandfather was an engineer. And it was something I was really passionate about because I like taking things apart, putting them back together, and being in and around construction is something that I really enjoyed. But as I progressed in my career, and specifically when I got out of design engineering and I got into sales, it was a time where an opportunity came up and I said, you know what, I've never done sales, but I'll try it for a year. And at the end of the year, if it works, then, you know, I'll keep doing it. And if it doesn't, I can always go back to being an engineer. And so I took this time to go through, you know, trying to figure out what it is to be a sales as an engineer. I remember coming home early on. It was really funny because I told my wife, well, this is going to be great. I'm going to sell every job because I'm the only one who's an engineer because, we've got a guest.
That's okay. It's great to have the pets on the show. It's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. They keep it interesting. So, but it's, you know, so it was one of those things where I thought, you know, just because I was an engineer, I was going to be a great salesperson. And you know, my wife rolled her eyes and said, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. And it was one of those instances where, you know, you really can't sell something until, you know, people always say, you know, until you, somebody knows how much you care, they don't care what you know. And it was that how much you care piece that I really had to work on and use to differentiate myself. And so it started there. And then I went from a position of just being in sales to then being in management and ultimately having 115, you know, employees that reported to me. And I can tell you not one of them walked in there with a problem that I needed an engineering degree to solve. And so, you know, it really wasn't about, you know, doing these math problems for them. It was really more about how to get them to relate to the other coworkers and to how we're going to get the, you know, the best performance out of them. And so it really made me again, double down on, okay, what do I need to do to be an effective leader? And where I see it and you know, what I call now the engineering power skills all come back to emotional intelligence.
Okay, now it's really interesting. Now I want to go back because you said, I loved when you said with regards to emotional intelligence, one of the reasons you think it's important is until someone knows how much you care. And I think that's really, really, really deep. And I want to go a little bit deeper in terms of where it comes from for you, because obviously now you're teaching this and you're encouraging emotional intelligence, you know, within the workplace. But with your personal journey, has it impacted you in terms of, have you experienced somebody not being very emotional intelligent? Is that why you're passionate personally about it within the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. There's, there's several instances where it's come up, but one that really stuck with me early on in my career, I was a junior engineer, EIT engineer in training, and we were on a project meeting with a senior engineer and meeting with our client, who at this time was a city official, and we were trying to get a variance for a permit that we were applying for. And there was, you know, some discussion around why we were laying out the building the way we were and why we had to put, you know, things in certain places. And the inspector that we were talking to just said, I don't understand what's going on here. And, you know, my colleague that I was working with, you know, tried to explain it in three different ways, but really almost used that like really bad tourist analogy of just, you know, you don't speak my language, so I'm just going to speak louder and faster, or slower. And so it was like, you know, just kept getting really mad. And then finally just said, you know, if you don't understand this, you must be stupid. Wow. And it was like, yeah, I mean, just, and I mean, I remember like it like kind of took my breath away. I was like, did that just happen? And, you know, and so you saw that and you're like, holy cow, like that really stuck me. It's like, that's not any way. I mean, nothing came of that, you know. Actually more work came of that because we had to, you know, apologize. That person was ended up being demoted or not. Sort of demoted, but like it never interfaced with anybody outside the company. You know, we just create a lot more work. And so you just like, there's gotta be a better way. And what happened there? And I, you know, also said like, I don't ever want to be that guy. And so it's, you know, that stuck with me early on. In that same office, the flip side of that though is that was one of the best offices internally that I've ever been in. And the working environment that we had was really good. And it's a very diverse, I mean, you had people who, were devout Christians, some people who didn't believe in God, some people, you know, were whatever, you know, old, young, you know, male, female. I mean, there's a lot of diversity within the group, but when it came to getting projects done, everybody worked together. And one of the interesting things we had to do, and I remember asking my old boss about it, is like, Mike, how do you get everybody here to, you know, work together? And he goes, well, think about when you were hired. And I go, oh, you mean when I had to run the gauntlet? And he goes, yeah. And what they would do is you had to go and talk to everybody in the office. So you go, you know, office to office, talk to all the senior engineers. And then there's a group of, you know, the younger engineers in the middle, and you meet with them as a group. And I didn't know this at the time, but after I left, everybody comes back into the conference room and everybody has to say what they think about the person who just came in. Yeah. And the most important question was, is this somebody you feel like you could work with and they complement what we're trying to do here?
That's important, isn't it? It's important. I think that's in the workplace that you do feel that you have a connection with the people that you work with. But you know what? I'm still a bit stung myself by what you said earlier, because when you mentioned that the person said, if you don't understand this, you must be stupid. And you said it almost very passively. But when words are really, really, really powerful. And I feel mm-hmm. in the workplace, when someone says something really derogatory, really condescending, and just really rude, it does hit. It hits hard. But we fight back because most people, we're very emotionally resilient. So we fight back. And obviously sometimes it's a case of, you know, you want to keep your job, but actually that person should not be allowed to speak to any human being in that way. So, you know, so what was the next step with regards to that? How did that really make you feel when that was said to you?
Well, I guess that there was a pit in my stomach and it was like, you know, holy, you know, crap. Like, you know, I couldn't believe that was, you know, they just said that. And it was one of those things where it's like, again, I never want to be that person. And, you know, being, you know, I was a year out of college. And so seeing that, you know, so early in the workforce, it was kind of like, and this was somebody who had been with the company for 30 years. And so like, it was just kind of like, I hope that's not the way it is here. And it wasn't. I mean, it was a very, you know, outside the norm. Like you say, it was just, you know, specific to that one person, but it speaks to something. And, you know, I've been guilty of this. I mean, this is one of the things you asked about, like, well, how has this affected me? You know, there's a lot of, you know, training, you know, when you've got to go through, you know, 4 years of college, you have to take 2 8-hour exams. By the time you become an engineer, like, you've achieved something. And I don't take that away from anybody. But what you've just done is just proven that you can take a test, you know, and that's great. And there's things that you need to do. You know, I don't want to drive on a bridge that didn't have an engineer design it. There's things that go there, but it's not just what you do, it's how you do it. And I think that's the piece that we miss sometimes. And you can have the right answer, but if you express it in the wrong way, then, you know, it's almost as, you know, you might as well just have the wrong, you know, you've got the wrong answer, because both of them have to, you have to the right answer, you have to express it in the right way, for it really to truly, you know, convey. And that's the piece that, you know, it has been so transactional, in the past, where, you know, it's just about the numbers. And, you know, this is one of the things that has also informed kind of why emotional intelligence for me is so important, because I look at where people are in school now. And, you know, I think about, you know, I thought about going back to my alma mater and talking to the graduating seniors and saying, you know, these are the things that are going to help you future-proof your career. Because if you look at AI, automation, the things that are coming, technology is coming. Technology will do a lot of the things, you know, some of the design work I used to do would take me 3 days. You can get it done 3 hours if you have the right, you know, numbers to put in there and crunch it. Mm-hmm. So competing to be a human calculator is not where we want to go in engineering. And to be able to, you know, transcend that, you have to have collaboration and you have to be creative. And so that creativity and collaboration come from being emotionally intelligent. They don't come from passing a test or, you know, memorizing some equation. You know, that's, you know, you almost say it's the negative of that, right? It you know, it doesn't make you creative just by, you know, remembering some, you know, some static equation. So,
made such a valid point there, because when you talk, just talking about taking a test, because, you know, education is important and there is such an emphasis on education and everything that we do within the workplace. And obviously you have to go through a certain training process, but what hit home to me is that the fact that just because you can retain that information or read the books that you need to read for whatever course you do, you know, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I value education myself. My background is teaching, so I totally value it. But it doesn't mean that you are emotionally intelligent. And some people are naturally and some people aren't. And the people that aren't, sometimes it may not be their fault. It may be just the experience of something that has been modeled to them. And, you know, it's just important that we make people aware, so you can kind of shake it up a little bit, so people can see, okay, you know what, I need to be thinking a little bit more about having a little bit more sensitivity about some of the people I work with. Because your workout in terms of personality, who in the room you can kind of joke with and who in the room, you know, you might have to be a bit more sensitive with, just by working out on an emotional and also an intuitive level, the group of people that you are working with. And it's interesting what you said when you picked up on, you have to be creative as well. And creativity requires emotional intelligence, you know. It's interesting you said that. It was interesting you said that, because you're, from what I know of you, which I think, I don't know if everybody else knows, but from what I know of you, you're actually naturally creative. And that's what I want to talk about coming forward. I mean, that other than doing the engineering, talk to us a little bit about what you kind of enjoy doing from a creative perspective that's not involved with engineering, so people can have another insight into Quinn's world.
So, you know, I love music, from a, you know, and it's interesting because my son's very musically inclined. My dad was a musician, and pretty much everyone on his side of the family played an instrument. I played sports, so I can't play or make any music, but I really love music. And so that's something that's near and dear. And it's funny because, you know, not to pull it back to engineering, but, you know, music is math. And so, like, there's a lot of structure there, which is kind of funny, because I think it marries this really well, because so many people, you know, think of don't think of musicians, or they always think of musicians being creative, but don't realize that, hey, they're also pretty good mathematicians. They just come from it in a more logical, I mean, a more natural way.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you with regards to music, because, you know, mm-hmm. to be able to read music, it's similar patterns mm-hmm. to understanding some of the patterns that you have in mathematics. And it's the same part of the brain. So it is left brain, and I suppose creativity is always seen as right brain, but it's left yeah. brain work. So, yeah, you're totally right there. There's lots of marriages there with regards to, you know, musicians and, you know, and mathematics. So yeah, no, I'm totally with you. So continue. So I'll cut you off.
Yeah. So, so that's, you know, the one, you know, I would say a passion of mine. The other one, I really enjoy cooking. And so, and not surprisingly, my, my other, daughter is really into cooking as well. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, creativity in there, and you know, definitely an off the recipe kind of guy. I'll, you know, which gets tough though, because sometimes my wife will be like, "That was really good. What did you do?" And I was like, "A little sprinkle of this, sprinkle of that." You know, and so, you know, but it's that's one that I enjoy, and it's funny because most people are like, "Man, you really like to cook?" And I was like, "Well, no. More importantly, I like to eat." But because I like to eat, then you know, making a you got to cook first. So, you know, yeah. But so that's something there. Yeah, I've always been a doodler, which I think is another one that's kind of an interesting thing. And you know, there's a lot of studies coming out now where, you know, actually when you doodle, you pay more attention. Yeah. You know, it's like you know, women who used to sit around and knit all the time, or even like, you know, folks who would like, you know, whittle on wood or something, you know, there's almost that like task that you're doing with your hands that just takes that baseline distractibility out. And then you're able to really kind of focus on something, or it lets you kind of, you know, zone out, and then you kind of get some of that intuitive thinking going. And so
I'm doodling now. Every single time I do real stories, I'm listening. I doodle. It's my way of listening. So that's really you said that.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll show you at the end, but I do. Time I have a conversation, I do. I've been doing it from young, and it's really interesting because you can actually look at my school reports. They actually tell me off for doodling. Yeah. Tanya's constantly doodling. But then they're amazed. I'm doodling, but I'm still listening. But it's my way of connecting. So it's so interesting that the studies are finally coming out, because I was always told off for it, you know? Right. And it's something that you can't naturally do sometimes if you're in the boardroom as well. You know, that used to be really hard for me to stop doodling. So I'd have to do things with my hands. I'm quite sensory. So I'd have to do something. So sometimes I just rub my fingers together, you know? So little bit, you kind of tell doodlers in the room when they find it really hard to sit still, because, you know, they haven't had permission to doodle, because that's where the flow and the creativity comes. So I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because it is interesting mindfully how creativity allows the brain to think very clearly and just allows everything to flow. So that's a really good point you just made there, Quinn, and a really great insight into your world as well and your creativity. But yeah. I'm just imagining you and your children cooking. It sounds like it'd be amazing just to watch you guys cook. Like you say, you throw this in, you throw that in, and it's a very kind of experimental journey, it sounds. How old are your children, Quinn?
What's that?
How old are your children?
Oh, so I have a 10-year-old daughter who is the cook. And the funny part about her, though, is she is Miss Recipe. So we kind of balance each other out. And so, you know, cause I'll always push her to experiment, and then she's like, but it's not in the recipe, Dad. And it's a tug of war, but it's a good balance. And then, my son is 12, and then I have a 15-year-old daughter as well. So,
so who reminds you most of you when you were young? Which child reminds you most of yourself when you were young?
You know, it's really funny, because the different things that they do, you know, I feel like I'm in there in some ways. You know, my daughter has really curly hair like I did when I was her age. And, you know, she and I connect over music. She's an actress, and so there's things that she does that I'm not an in front of the camera kind of guy, but they do that. I would say, it's, you know, and then my son, you know, he doodles a lot, and he, you know, runs around. I mean, there's just little pieces in each one, and they're so uniquely themselves that it's you know, it's fun to see them kind of be themselves, because I see a lot, you know, my wife and I have known each other since the fifth grade. So I've known her since I was about 10 years old as well. So I see a lot of her in them because I knew her when she was their age too. And so it's kind of fun to see, you know, the, you know, where our personalities come together and, you know, have these, you know, just fun, creative individuals.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I love the fact that you met your wife in the fifth grade. That's lovely. What kind of brought you two together in the fifth grade? What was it? Was it subjects or what was the sort of things you both...
Well, yeah, I mean, we were in class together, but it was kind of a funny thing. We were the ones who would just talk about... actually, you know, this is kind of funny to think about now, because we had a little thing where we would ask each other what color our sky was. And it really just was kind of like, what kind of mood are you in? You know, and so, you know, I remember having that. And so it was just, you know, I think we both, it was just fun to have somebody that you could have a conversation with that was a little bit different than what you're normally talking about on the playground. So,
oh, that's beautiful. So you'd ask each other, what color sky is your sky? And you meant, what kind of mood are you in? And that's a real link to now with your emotional intelligence, isn't it?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah, absolutely.
In terms of already, you probably connected on the fact that she wanted to know how you were feeling.
Yeah. And I haven't thought about that in probably 15 years, which is crazy. It just popped in my head. So, but no, I mean, she was always, you know, she was just always fun. I mean, she was, and it was great. I mean, she was my best friend for, you know, we would just talk and it was a lot of, just easy conversations and about just really random stuff.
Do you still check in now? You know, after being married for so long, do you still check in? What kind of mood are you in? What do you say to each other now?
You know, that's one of the things that, we don't do it as much as we used to. And, and it's something that with the kids and everything and, you know, we're in that phase right now where, you know, she's a mom, you know, 1,000%, which that's actually a pet peeve of mine because you can't have 1,000%, but she's 100% a mom and does a great job with it. And so I know there'll be a time for us to have, you know, more of these conversations, but it's, but yeah, it's to see her do that with them and the way she has those conversations with the kids, you know, I am very happy knowing that our kids are now going to know about emotional intelligence formally before, you know, we were ever being kind of introduced to it.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. So you check in with them, you still check in with them, but I just wanted to see or find out what that language, I loved it. You say, what color's the sky? I just love that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's yellow today. No, it's purple. And what those colours actually mean to you. Do you know anything a little bit more about colour therapy? Have you looked into that, colour therapy at all?
I know some colour therapy, you know, and oh gosh, I can see her face. She's part of Humans First with us now. I just watched her, what she did with Josie the other day. But yeah, so I'm familiar with that. And I didn't know about it back then.
Oh, okay. Well, you're talking about Kate on Humans First.
Kate. Yeah. Sorry. God, it was like on the tip of my tongue. So yeah.
She works with oils and colors. No, we know it's interesting. No, cause I work with color as well, but no, it's so fascinating really when you acknowledge what those colors mean and how color really affects you. No, it's no, cause I've had Kate on the show as well, which is really interesting, but I love that. I just love that. I have to work with that one. I might have to knit one. What colours the sky? I love that. Just to kind of get kids talking, because I think sometimes it's just simple things, really, that you might have to say to a young person that just gets them talking. And rather than ask them, how are you, they don't always respond in the same way, because I don't know if it's the same in the States, but when you say to somebody, how are you in this country, it doesn't really mean how are you, right? Because the way that we respond is, oh, I'm fine. I'm fine, and then you get your day, it's like, how are you? I'm fine, that's it, you know. So it's important to find different ways of communicating with children or communicate with each other. So it's probably about changing the questions. Is it the same with you, do you think, like culturally? Is it, I mean, do people talk a little bit more? Would you say it's the same?
I think it's very it's very much the same. You know, that's a, you know, I'd say that's a sterile phrase for a lot of people. Although I will say it has taken on a little bit of a new meaning, you know, with where we're at now in the world, and that's good to see. It's something, it's interesting you say, because it is one of those questions where it's almost a closed question, you know, and the color, or even, you know, bringing up a way to talk about something that's a little more abstract, I think gives people a little bit of freedom to, you know, be a little more vulnerable, because again, they're talking about the sky, they're not talking about themselves, when really they're talking about themselves, you know, but it's kind of through this other lens. And so you kind of pretend that it's not exactly you, but if you listen, they're going to talk about themselves. So, you know, I know that's, you know, it's a great way to have conversations. You know, there's the, I think you have talked about the emotional culture deck before, where, you know, you give a deck of cards that has these preset emotions on it. And the nice part about that is having these cards, again, gives you the permission to talk about the card. So you're almost wearing it as a mask, because it's the card, not you. And it just gives you that one slight degree of separation, so you can be a little bit more open than you would be, you know, if you just had to say, this is where I'm at right now.
Beautiful. Yeah, no, I love that as well. And sometimes it's something quite simple, really. And I love the whole work with cards. We go a little bit deeper, because I suppose, you know, cards have always spoke, even going back to centuries ago, you know, where cards speak to you and emotions speak to you. I get back to oracle cards cards, you know, and it depends on what you believe. But it's interesting how powerful that is, you know, and how it's now used, because I don't think that's a new thing with regards to the emotional intelligence cards. But it's interesting how people are now using that more in self-development, when really its origins have always been there, isn't it? You know, regards to, again, the oracle, you know, it's just kind of softening a little bit, isn't it? It's making it a little bit softer so people understand. I suppose sometimes associate different things with spirituality, and that could be quite scary for some people. So just by, even like with colour, the fact that you might look at different colours and think, okay, what mood am I in? Or what colour is like? But, you know, I'm seeing, Quinn, I've got an idea for you, and I'm just going to share it live on the podcast. That you should create cards saying what color is the sky. I love that. I've just got the idea for you, and I'm just sharing that with you in terms of what color the sky, and having those as different mood cards. But that, I think I've just seen that because I just think that's that's associated to you and your wife and your family. Do you know? I just had that idea. So you can do I'm putting it on the podcast. We'll put it on there. You know, live. We're going live with it.
Put it out there for the universe.
It's an idea I'm sharing with you, so it'd be interesting to see whether you know, use it or not. But I absolutely love it. Now, going back to when you were young, you know, you mentioned your parents were both architects, and you mentioned that you obviously went down the route of being an engineer. But when you were quite young, let's say about 12, that's when we kind of go secondary school in this country. Mm-hmm. What did you actually want to be? Did you want to be an engineer, or did you want to be something else?
No, I wanted to be an engineer, you know, because I used to, you know, I, like my dad would, he worked, he went from actually architecture to construction, and it was always doing stuff around the house, but like he would give me his old tools to take apart. So I was always fascinated the way things work. Mm-hmm. And I really thought, because of playing sports and being in, you know, just interested in weightlifting and all the stuff that was going on, I thought biomedical engineering would be interesting. Maybe even looking at prosthetics, and, you know, early on thought that was kind of what I was going to do. And then, when I got accepted to the Citadel to play football, I started looking, you know, the civil engineering program was strong there. And I thought maybe I'll go to grad school for something else. And I just kind of fell into, you know, the civil part. And I actually got into exterior, high performance building envelope, which is the outside of your building, walls and the roof and keeping water out. And so it was kind of an evolution through college, because again, I had a construction background. And, you know, part of the other thing I'm passionate about is the environment. And so spent a lot of time in nature as a kid too, which I think we all need to do more of. But that's kind of how that went. So I went from, and I guess even younger than that, I remember as a kid, I used to draw a lot of airplanes. And, you know, my grandfather was a World War II pilot, and I have a great uncle who's you know, was a pilot. And so there was that. So I thought, you know, airplanes were always really cool, and maybe designing those would be fun. Coincidentally, my younger brother is an engineer. He was in the Air Force, and he was a crew chief for an F-16 fighter jets, and can actually build one of those things, which always just amazes me because the operating manual on that thing's like, you know, 18 inches tall. So, I think there was definitely a design piece there. And always knew I kind of wanted to do that. But the funny part is I met another interesting thing when I got in college. You know, I remember freshman year, we have to take English. And so you're reading, Dickens or Canterbury Tales or, you know, whatever these, you know, very, you know, standard English things you have to read for a 1-on-1 class. Mm-hmm. And my roommate hated it. And I actually enjoyed it because I was like, finally, I just get a break. You know, it's like, it was kind of like light reading. And I wasn't having to do, you know, we were doing plenty of math. And so I just had something else to kind of just be a little distraction. So I've always kind of had that duality of, I like getting and do working through problems. But if that's all I have to do, you know, I'm not one, and I have friends who are like this, you know, they can sit and just crunch numbers and really dig deep into a design project for hours on end, and they're happier than anything else. You know, that's really where they kind of get into their flow state and make things happen. That piece isn't for me. And if I had to describe, you know, where I find myself in that state most often is when I'm kind of bridging the two. And especially in sales, you know, it's almost just kind of like a Rosetta Stone. You know, you have to be able to understand the technical aspect of it, but then you have to convey it in a way that is relevant to, you know, somebody who doesn't have that technical background. You know, to get back to the "you must be stupid" story, you know, that was, you know, I looked at that and I was like, well, you know, they always say, yeah, if you can't explain it to somebody who doesn't know it, then you don't fully understand it yourself. And that's one of those things where, you know, we talk about coatings for, you know, exterior for roofs and stuff. And one of the things about it is you have to, you know, wash the roof. You have to, a lot of prep work goes into it. And then there's like, you know, then you put the coating down. Well, people will hear that and they're like, they've never put coatings on, I don't understand. And I was like, okay, well, if you were going to go put a bumper sticker on your car, how would you do it? And like, you spend about 10 minutes cleaning the bumper of your car, and then you spend about 1 minute putting the sticker on.
Yeah.
That's the same analogy. You know, we're going to take 2 or 3 days to get the roof ready, and then we're going to spend a day to put the coating on. And so that's where we're, you know, so, oh yeah, I understand that, you know, or, you know, if you're going to plant a tree, you put a $10 tree in a $100 hole. Well, what does that mean? Well, you want to dig a big enough hole, and you want to put the right soil in it, and you want to do everything so that the tree has a chance to grow, instead of just making a hole that's just as big for the tree. Well, you know, somebody who likes gardening, now all of a sudden they understand that there's more in the prep work than there is the actual act of doing it. And it can relate in a way that, oh, okay, I understand why it's costing me so much money, or you're going to be out here for 4 days to, you know, to just put a paint, you know, paint my building. It's like, well, no, we're not painting your building. We're getting it ready to be painted, and then we're painting. And, you know, and so it's just being able to understand, you know, the technical aspect of it, but convey it to people who aren't, because most of the time, you know, the people who make decisions aren't the technical people. You know, you don't have, you know, And I think that translates into a lot of different industries. You know, you think of how many people, you know, you go to these industry conventions and everybody's standing around talking and using all these jargony acronym laden sentences. And, you know, and it's like, what, you know, what the heck are they talking about? You know, and it's, you know, it's just, you know, being able to speak in simple terms and convey it in a way that really, you know, communicates it so that, you know, it's not that you have to be the technical person and have all that, you know, and I think people just, you know, I guess the other part of this too is some people aren't confident enough that they, you know, so they want to almost overstate that. I guess what I was trying to get to is like, there's just an overstatement to make it sound like you know what you're talking about instead of just, you know, just speaking very simply. And I find the people who speak the simplest are the people who know the most.
Yeah, sometimes it's to get an understanding, really, isn't it, really, of what you're doing. But it's lovely to have you on today, Quinn. You know what, I was listening to you, I just felt that you've got so many different hats. and you've got so many different sides to you, and it's just interesting just to listen to you. And kind of what I'm kind of hearing is you are needing that mindful space sometimes. Like you said, when you read, you feel sometimes you used to really enjoy that, because I suppose reading or artwork or doing something like that is finding that mindful space to relax the mind, isn't it? Sometimes when you've got so much going on, or when you're doing so many different things. So that sounds absolutely beautiful. So just before we go, I just wanted to see if there's anything that you want to tell my audience with, or maybe if you maybe want to just tell my audience what was your favorite story, and or a quote from a story, or a quote from, you know, someone who's like quite inspirational to you. What do you want to leave my audience with today?
There's two things, because we mentioned it earlier, and it's really been a big, another thing that changed me. My dad actually got into and through with my stepmom in high school. My stepmom started first, but they got into cranial sacral therapy, which, and so, you know, and for those who don't know, I mean, it's basically energy work. Yes. And, you know, and that was another thing where, you know, the first time they worked on me, I felt like, you know, just electricity shot down the side of my leg, and, you know, they weren't doing anything but basically just, you know, holding my head in their hands and laying flat on a, you know, a massage table. And so, you know, another thing that's been really important that I've understand is we are all energy. Yeah. And at a very, you know, in a very engineering way, you know, that makes sense. But then from a very, you know, spiritual and beyond, you know, we understand that. And I think really what we're doing with all of, you know, in traditional engineering with emotional intelligence, it's really all about energy and how are we using energy and how are we optimizing our energy use. And so, you know, that's one thing that helps me kind of pull all these things together. When you look at some of the, you know, the articles I've written and things, you know, I'm always trying to take emotional intelligence and put it back into an engineering equation. But I think because there's all these equations that relate to energy, they kind of work in a weird way. And so, you know, that's something that, it's informed a lot of what I do. So I wouldn't want to not have that.
Beautiful connection with energy, like you say, you know, so you're an engineer, we're all energy and we're all working with energy, and it's just kind of knowing, I suppose, the different tones of the energy that we're working with. So it's just really interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, so lovely to have you on, Quinn.
Yeah. No, great.
I'm gonna have to, just for the time, I'm gonna have to say goodbye now, but just want to
it's been beautiful being here. Every time we talk, it's a lot of fun. So thank you again for the invitation, and look forward to talking again in the future.
Lovely. Thank you. I just want to say from Tanya Communication Doctor and Quinn Farrell, adios.
Adios.
One of my great takeaways from the show is, when you look up to the sky, what do you see? It was beautiful when Quinn described being a young child and speaking to another little girl, and that little girl who we spoke to every day about the sky, that child, all them children then became husband and wife. But that was so powerful in terms of emotional intelligence, because the innocence of describing their feelings without really realizing or knowing that they're doing that was really powerful to me. And I just felt that is emotional intelligence right there, without even thinking about it. It's within us as people. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. To listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.